This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Hi, I'm Greg Watson and welcome to Property Matters, the show where we talk all things property here on Manawatu People's Radio and on podcasts wherever you can find it. We love talking about real estate, whether it's buying, selling, information for landlords or tenants, commercial, industrial. It's great fun. And stay tuned because we usually have something that's local from here in the Manawatu, something national in terms of the market, and if we have time, we'll throw in something international as well. So thanks so much for joining us today. As many of you will know, in the Manawatu region, we've got some really large construction jobs coming up in the next 5 to 10 years. And an article that's recently been in Stuff in the Manawatu Standard has the headline, Recruitment of Beneficiaries to Help with Manawatu's $4 billion construction boom. $4 billion, quite amazing. Where is this money going? Well, there's quite a number of areas. There's the Air Force, the Army. It's going into the likes of the four-lane bypass road that's going to bypass the gorge as that became too treacherous. That's a large project over the next 5 years. And also we've got the Kiwi Rail Hub, where they're moving the railway from between Milson, Cloverleigh and the remainder of the city to outside of the city, effectively centralising a distribution hub here in the Manawatu, which is very exciting. $4 billion construction boom. So here's the question. Amongst all the other building that's going on, how are we going to actually get the people to build and to construct some of these massive projects? So this article and Stuff talks about Kiwi Can-Do Chairwoman, that's Dame Fran Wild. She's launched a program aiming to get unemployed people into trades. We all know that there's a housing shortage. We know that there needs to be more people really helping out and getting things done. So this article says that an unlikely crew may provide the solution to Manawatu's pending construction boom, and that is beneficiaries. The article says that there's never been a better time in the Manawatu to pull on a fluoro and a hard hat with projects totaling $4 billion in the pipeline. There's some really big projects. Another one I didn't mention, of course, is the Otaki to North Livin Expressway as well. So the Kiwi Can-Do project aims to get unemployed people into trades and has found early success in its five-year history. And they're looking at recruiting people from Dannevirke to Whanganui. Why such a big range? Well, that really is the scope of the projects. It makes sense that the road that's going over the hills, over the mountains, so to speak, between Tararua and Manawatu, will need people living on the Tararua side. And that's why they're looking at gathering people from a large geographic area to come in and to do this work. So it's asked the Ministry of Social Development to pair job seekers, generally aged between 18 to 25, with actively retired tradespeople who have become affectionately known as Dad's Army. So young people working alongside experienced people to work on these big projects that we've got happening in the Manawatu. It's also designed to help people that have fallen in between the education cracks, Wild said, in terms of getting people the skills they need to work. So it's really two birds with one stone. It's allowing beneficiaries in the Manawatu to be able to train and become more educated around the work that is desperately needed in this area. So really, really interesting to see how that one goes. There's, like I say, a lot to do, and there is a shortage of people to do it. So in another article, just talking more about a national level, this was in the business section of Stuff, and what was interesting about this was that they say that the headline says, economists lay out a worst-case scenario for interest rates. It says that New Zealand's Reserve Bank could cut the official cash rate as low as negative 0.75%. There we are, negative 0.75% in a worst-case scenario. But borrowers shouldn't expect that to mean that they'll be paid to hold their mortgages. So the Reserve Bank has said it could cut the OCR as low as minus 0.75%. ASB economists, in fact, have said that they expect the cash rate to be cut to a low of 0.5% this cycle. However, if things get rather bad and they really need to stimulate the economy, we will be looking at an OCR that goes into the negative. So what does the official cash rate actually mean? One Danish bank launched a negative home loan rate in August, paying borrowers 0.5% a year to actually take out a loan. So it's just ways of stimulating the economy, really. The ASB economist Mark Smith said the rates would only drop to that level, to the level that banks could still attract sufficient deposits. So it needs to stay at a mildly positive rate, even though the official cash rate could go negative. So the Reserve Bank has indicated that that's the lower limit. What effect would this have? Well, the Reserve Bank in the past has cut rates in a preemptive fashion, which is really just saying, look, we'll cut the rates now, stimulate the economy, do a decent drop. That's what they did last time around when it went down 0.5%. They say that with the recent domestic economic data continuing to deteriorate and the global economic concerns showing no signs of abating, further aggressive action in November and February can't be ruled out. Again, this is one big, massive balancing act, the OCR. It makes it harder for the dollar, harder for people with money in the bank, but what they're trying to do is stimulate people to go out and buy, to borrow, and to stimulate the economy along. So it's a really interesting situation. We'll guess we'll just have to watch the space, but that's certainly the strongest that they've said. And the important thing to take away in terms of the Property Matters show today is that even if the OCR drops much further, it's likely the interest rates through the bank won't. As I mentioned, the banks need to make an interest rate positive enough so that people still put money in the bank. And here's a question for you today. There was a recent survey carried out by the Real Estate Institute of New Zealand by Kantar TNS, indicating that real estate professionals are increasingly open to embracing new digital technology in the interest of providing a more effective service to vendors and buyers. So there's one area in particular. Can you guess what it is? The top real estate tech tool by the industry that's just come out, or has been out for a few years now. Can you guess what it is? I can tell you that the top tool for real estate people now in terms of usage is drone usage. So the number of respondents using drone footage in 2019 has risen 66%, up from 51% when this was last taken in 2017. So Bindi Norwell, who's the CEO of the Real Estate Institute of New Zealand, says that this massive increase in uptake in real estate people using drones does not surprise her. She says, and I quote, "Many years ago, a real estate marketing campaign was essentially a single photo on a newspaper page. I remember those days without showing my age too much, with a very short script and the agent's phone number. But new technology has completely transformed the process of buying and selling. And drone footage, things like 3D walkthroughs and virtual reality can really help prospective purchasers to really experience the property and its surroundings with a 360-degree view." That's the words of Bindi Norwell. Social media continues to be seen as a valuable marketing tool, and 60% of respondents using unpaid social media, while 58% of real estate companies currently pay for advertising on social platforms. Now, back in 2017, these figures were 50% and 39%, so they're heading upwards. And the uplift in paid social media advertising shows an interesting trend. Bindi Norwell says that social media is such a valuable marketing tool because it allows agents and their clients to connect easily. And in fact, it's one of the first places most potential buyers look these days, according to her. She says that Facebook itself is one of the most popular of all social media platforms with real estate professionals because it targets people who are actually looking in a particular town, a particular suburb, or a particular price range. And the agent can display his or her listings, videos, photos, updates, as well as past sales and testimonials. Did you know that almost 50% of people, or 50% of New Zealanders, check their Facebook each day? So according to Bindi Norwell, Real Estate Institute of New Zealand CEO, she says, the fact that real estate practitioners are embracing social media just simply makes good business sense. The 2019 survey results also talks a lot about the popularity of smartphone apps, which allow agents and vendors and buyers to communicate whenever and wherever they want. So 51% of real estate companies are now using the power of smartphone apps, compared to only 38% 2 years ago. And video advertising is another area with a noticeable rise in the number of users. Otherwise in the industry, search engine optimization has gone up. As well as that, artificial intelligence is a new one that's on the scene for real estate as well. 7% of real estate companies say they're using artificial intelligence, which is a new question in the 2019 survey. And the use of virtual reality is catching on, with 5% using it currently, while 48% are considering it. Again, Bindi Norwell says that with so many new tools available to real estate professionals, they might appear to be prioritising the relatively tried and true, but there are clearly some in the industry who have quickly become comfortable with the real cutting-edge digital tools and services and are using it to benefit themselves and their clients. 1% of respondents reported that they're using robots in open homes, and it'll be interesting to compare that figure next time they survey, given that 11% would stated that they would consider using them. Now, if you're listening to this show and you haven't seen a video of robots showing houses for rent or for sale, they're doing it in the United States. You can just search that on YouTube. A robot opens the door, shows you around, and they've only got one word that I would say in response to that, and that's stairs. Yes, stairs, that's a bit of a difficult one for robots, but anyway. Talking about some of the far-fetched things, I think just before we go to a bit of a music break, just wanted to talk about how smart home technology could change your life over the next 5 years. And this was an interesting article that was on Stuff in the lifestyle section, and they say that the way that our homes look and interact with us will rapidly evolve over the next 5 years. So what would your smart home look like in 5 years? Well, according to this article, your alarm clock goes off in the morning and it tells the blinds to open. The sun streams in, and that's annoying, but by the time you've zombie stumbled down the hallway, the kettle has boiled itself for you, a cup of coffee. Sounds great to me. You voice activate your speakers and play soft tunes for the morning and turn your kitchen lights up to match. The coffee takes the last bit of milk left in the fridge, so the fridge adds it to your shopping list, which you send to countdown from your phone. The house is warm because the heat pump itself turned on half an hour before you woke up, and it turns itself off to save power at your usual leaving time. The washing machine's finished and sends a text to remind you it's supposed to rain later, so you should put your things in the dryer. Sounds far-fetched? It's real. It's real. So you walk out the door and the house locks itself, has its own 24/7 video monitoring security system, and after you've gone, the vacuum starts up. So technology commentator Peter Griffin says that New Zealanders are still getting their heads around how to utilise smart technology, and we're not really at the point yet where it's unified on one network, but we're rapidly getting there. Did you know the global market for smart home technology is set to reach a projected $103 billion in annual revenue by the end of 2019? So devices in your home, $1,003 billion. That's an outstandingly large figure. By the end of 2018, more than 200 homes in the world had at least one smart device. And by the end of 2023, this report predicts that over 300 million smart homes and more than 6.4 billion smart home devices, that's 21 per smart home. So they're saying it's not unrealistic considering how many smartphones, TVs and laptops are in your household, fridges that refill themselves via online order, artificial intelligence assistants, cameras that monitor the watering of your garden, and mirrors that advise you of your looks and nutrition all exist now. Imagine that you look in the mirror, and instead of being mean to yourself, the mirror's mean to you. That's, wow, I'm not so sure about that. But there is a high-tech smart mirror that is able to give beauty advice and pep talks to boost your self-esteem. I'd probably have to go for the latter. Face made for radio. Produced by a Japanese company, the mirror boasts a monitor, a camera, and a speaker. And so some of these things are coming. It'll be a different world. It won't be a radically different world, but it will be a different world that'll happen gradually, and that's the interesting thing. So what homes will have in 5 years' time is seen by Peter Griffin, the technology expert, as an interim step between what we've got now and the homes of the future. So as we're getting the 5G network rollout, the faster internet, fibre, etc., smart technology will just become this invisible layer of convenient things that are helping us out. Right now I've got several smart devices. I use them at work, I use them at home, and they're just designed to bring an extra convenience to life. So we're actually going to go to some music now. We're just going to have a little break in the Property Matters show. It's been a lot of fun so far. This is the song by 21 Pilots, Migraine.
Am I the only one I know? Waging my wars behind my face and above my throat. Shadows will scream that I'm alone. Oh, oh.
Range from up, down, and sideways. Thank God it's Friday, cause Fridays will always be better than Sundays, cause Sundays are my suicide days. I don't know why they always seem so dismal. Thunderstorms, clouds, snow, and a slight drizzle. Whether it's the weather or the letters by my bed, sometimes death seems better than the migraine in my head. Let it be said what the headache represents. It's me defending in suspense. It's me suspended in a defenseless test, being tested by a ruthless examiner that's represented best by my depressed thoughts. I do not have writer's block. My writer just hates the clock. It will not let me sleep. I guess I'll sleep when I'm dead. And sometimes death seems better than the migraine in my head.
Am I the only one I know? Waging my wars behind my face and above my throat. Shadows will scream that I'm alone. But I know.
So not what's growing in my psyche. It's a different me, a difficult to beast. A feasting on burnt down trees. Freeze frame, please let me paint a mental picture portrait. Something you won't forget. It's all about my forehead and how it is a door that holds back contents that make Pandora's box contents look non-violent. Behind my eyelids are islands of violence. My mind shipwrecked, this is the only land my mind could find. I did not know it was such a violent island. Full of tidal waves, suicidal crazed lions. They're trying to eat my blood running down the chin. And I know that I can fight or I can let the lion in. I begin to assemble what weapons I can find. Cause sometimes to stay alive you gotta kill your mind.
Am I the only one I know?
Say that we should take a day to break away from all the pain our brain has made. The game is not played alone. And I would say that we should take a moment and hold it and keep it frozen and know that life has a hopeful undertone. And I would say that we should take a day to break away from all the pain our brain has made. The game is not played alone. And I would say that we should take a moment and hold it and keep it frozen and know that life has a hopeful undertone.
Am I the only one?
And that was 21 Pilots with Migraine. You're with Greg Watson. We're here on Property Matters, the show where we talk all things property. It's been great having your company. And we're going to move on now to some rental matters. Some rental matters, that is, matters between landlords and tenants. Now, in New Zealand tenancy law, there are some big, big fines you want to avoid. Big fines for landlords and for tenants. In fact, fines isn't the right word. If we were an American audience, we'd be talking about punitive damages. As well, and in other words, money paid by one party to another party for doing something wrong, for breaking the rules. And this causes no end of frustration for private landlords who accidentally break the rules. And there's numerous cases of this. In fact, I'm reading multiple cases every week of particularly self-managing landlords doing things wrong and tenants being awarded compensation. But occasionally it's tenants who do things wrong and landlords ruled. So what's been happening? What's been happening in the last short while? Well, here's an article. New Plymouth tenant who lived in a house with broken windows gets thousands in compensation. Not a little bit. Let's have a look. So what's the story? A woman living in a cold, drafty home with broken windows will get thousands of dollars in compensation from her landlord, but the mother will still have to find a new place to rent despite not being able to find a home due to Taranaki's rental shortage. So this all sounds a bit messy. But in a tenancy tribunal decision released in late September, adjudicator Kristen Collar ruled against Whangarei landlords Ryan and Pauline Johnson, ordering them to pay $3,120 compensation to the tenant Amanda Price. Ouch. Northland landlords were ordered to pay the compensation and to let their tenant live rent-free in their house for 4 weeks. The tribunal also ordered the landlords to immediately get an electrician to fix power problems at the property where only one power point was working in the whole house. How can landlords let this happen? It really upsets me. It really, really does to let people living that. So if they got fined or made to pay compensation, well, that's the way it should be. So Price, the tenant, moved in with her family in October 2018 under a one-year fixed term, but in July she gave notice to her landlords that the house needed work, including the power problems and the house not being fully insulated, as she's quite entitled to do. On top of that, several windows in the house needed repairs and new latches so they could properly open and shut, the court decision said. Price said two of the bedrooms could not be used because the drafts from the broken windows made them too cold. Unbelievable. The decision said the landlords failed to carry out repairs and just weeks later gave Price her notice would end, notice her tenancy would end on October the 1st. Price claimed the notice was retaliatory and while she wanted to move out, she had not yet been found anywhere to go. However, the tenancy tribunal found the notice was valid based on a genuine business decision to repair and sell the house. The adjudicator said there is never any security even for the best tenant that a fixed term will continue. The Johnstones claimed Price owed $3,000 worth of rent. This was recalculated to $250. Their claims for costs associated with cleaning, section maintenance, rubbish removal and stress were also dismissed. Obviously, a little bit of two sides to a story. But Collar ordered the Johnstones to let Price live rent-free in the house until October 15th to make up for spending the tenant's bond instead of lodging it with the bond centre. Oh my goodness, this is unbelievable. They didn't even lodge the bond. So they were also ordered to pay Price $3,370 in compensation minus the $250 she owed them in rent arrears. Folks, these cases are unbelievable. Here's another one. This is the headline from the New Zealand Herald. Evicted Christchurch tenant fined for leaving loaded firearm opposite school. Yes, evicted. A Christchurch tenant who lived opposite a primary school faces a hefty bill after leaving a loaded firearm behind and contaminating his rental with methamphetamine. Tenant Nicholas Hill was ordered to pay his landlord $11,500 in a recent tenancy tribunal hearing, and that included more than $2,000 to cover the cost of hiring the security teams used to evict him and conduct a post-eviction security test. It also included more than $3,000 to cover costs associated with the meth cleanup at the rental, as well as the money for a missing lawnmower. So you do see some pretty bad situations out there. The landlord then chose to change house's locks after a loaded firearm was found in the garage, which is directly opposite a school, the adjudicator said. Incredible. So here's another one. In a separate tenancy tribunal hearing, tenants Anna Murray and Mark Miller were ordered to pay $19,400 to a landlord, David Dye. That included $3,500 to replace a hot water cylinder in an oven that were both removed from the rental in Auckland. Murray and Miller were ordered to pay the $7,500 to repair damaged walls in the home and almost $2,000 for damaged windows and carpets. So that things must have really gone off the rails for those people. Now, here's something more local. I'm just leafing through my bits of paper so that I've got the right information here for you. Here we go. Let's just make sure I've got the right stuff. Here we are. So here's the final article for today's show. Warnings from police after reports of gang members at an empty rental. This is a Manawatu story, so it's here for our local listeners. It was in the Manawatu Standard. Real Estate Institute Chief Executive Bindi Norwell says agents are given training on what to do when they encounter dodgy situations at properties. Concerns gang members were using empty properties for nefarious purposes has prompted warnings from police and real estate experts. Police were called to a Palmer's North property last month after a person thought they saw gang members using the vacant rental home. A police spokesman said no one was there when the officers arrived and the place seemed secure. However, there were calls from time to time about people trespassing and damaging vacant properties in the Manawatu, she said. The Real Estate Institute of New Zealand Chief Executive Bindi Norwell said criminals were known to target vacant rentals or properties for sale. She says when it does happen, it causes immense stress and cost for everyone involved. Agents' advice to sellers and landlords would be to make sure properties were secure and alarmed to ensure their insurance policies cover potential damage by criminals. It is something I've come across in my many years in property management, is situations where squatters effectively move in. You do have to get the police involved to move them out. So agents are given training on how to react if they found a dodgy situation at the property. She said they're taught not to engage with anyone they feel uncomfortable around and to immediately leave a situation if they feel they could be in danger. So if you're a landlord, common sense should prevail. Police are there for a reason. And again, even the police advise securing the homes with locks on the doors and windows, having security systems on vacant rental properties. Alarms, security lights and cameras would all work to deter people from breaking in. It's also important for neighbours, they say, to keep an eye on vacant houses and call police if anything was amiss. So just a word of warning there, if you've got an empty rental property, it's not uncommon that people might break in and steal things like the copper from inside the hot water cylinder, copper spouting and so forth. Sometimes they'll just break in because they need somewhere to sleep, or they might just break in and vandalise. So if you've got an empty property, it's important that you check what your insurance company requires in order to be able to pay out for these sorts of things. Even moving squatters on, people can cause damage as they go. It's a criminal offence under civil law, but there is an actual due process. So if you've got an empty rental property and there's squatters that have moved in, it's a police matter. Do not try and handle that one yourself. And that's all we've got for Property Matters this week. I'm Greg Watson. It's been great fun having you here today. You can look me up, Greg Watson in Palmerston North, if you are interested in finding me, finding out about me, stalking me on Facebook or something like that. And, of course, Manawatu People's Radio, you can find our show Property Matters on there as well, or on places like iTunes, where all podcasts are found. Thank you so much for joining in. It's been great fun. Until next time, have a great week in property.
Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.